And welcome to Tokelore.
I'm Sarah.
I'm Kiki.
Get stoned with us as we discover what folklore is and where to find it.
And as we learn about ancient and contemporary cultures.
All while imbibing in local cannabis. Today is a very specific tangent that you will likely see repeating over and over.
In fact, you will start to see it showing up everywhere when you know what to look for.
We will take a look at an age-old practice that is often misunderstood and misrepresented.
We will share our own journey and relationship with the cards.
And we will use them to gain insight and a unique perspective on a random, yet-to-be-determined topic.
Sarah, are your cards good and shuffled?
I'm ready to deal.
On Tokelore.
So, I never really thought much about how the tarot fits into folklore, and it's always been something that's fascinated me, and I could never quite figure out why. There's a lot of mystery. There's a lot of mystery surrounding it, and there was obviously some sort of code because I would see it represented on TV, and it means something when a card, like a certain thing, pops up to sort of predict an omen, you know, or whatever, uses dramatic devices in storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
But really understanding how it evolved is kind of cool because it was not intentional. So I'm going to talk a little bit about what it is and why it's actually really a great thing to relate to folklore. Tokelore.
Tokelore folklore.
Right? So, tarot was a card game invented in the Italian Renaissance. There were multiple renaissances, the Italian Renaissance being the first, and it was this revival of, like, Greek and Roman philosophy and art and whatnot, and so people were, like, revisiting these ideas and making, repopularizing, you know, an old idea. And so you see a huge change historically during this first Italian Renaissance, and you see its influence on subsequent renaissances. You know, mm-hmm. England had theirs later, they're further away. They are influenced differently and at different times because right. of how slow news travels, right? But apparently this card game that was created in Italy became popular very quickly in the 15th century.
Okay.
And spread pretty quickly to all of the countries that Italy regularly traded with, so Germany and France and England. But at this time, Italy and France was definitely leading the charge as far as advancements and new developments, and they had some of the best artists, mm-hmm. musicians. So this card game gets created, catches on like wildfire all over the world, or at least within the Western world. And it has all of the cards that we know and love today. There are four suits, the wands, the cups, swords, and pentacles. And that actually changed depending on region a little bit, but there was always four suits. So it wasn't always wands, sometimes it was called clubs.
Okay, we're familiar with clubs.
Which is exactly. And then I think pentacles was also called coins. So just depended on the region that it was played in. And we've all played certain card games that there are multiple like variants on. Like Euchre is a really popular card game in the Midwest and I think East Coast. It's not one that most people around here know how to play. I got taught how to play it by some guys from Ohio.
Yeah, I have no idea what.
Anyways. But it was a specifically a trump game. It was a game that you had, you know, your four suits, and I don't remember the specific what needed to be accomplished in order to win the game, but there was a whole fifth suit that were all trump cards that were unique. And these, or triumph, I believe triumph was the name of the card game. What does it say in here?
Triumph. I don't know. There's also an E at the end.
Right. That was the name of the major arcana cards as we know them in tarot today. And they were always like these allegorical images. So all the others, you've got your 14 suits, ace through 10, and your four face cards or your royals that give you your suits that we're all familiar with today. But this fifth suit was a trump suit. And it matched up with there were 22 of the cards. And then you have 14 times four, all the others.
I don't know.
Right.
I don't know that one.
It wasn't until the 18th century, late 18th century, that the tarot cards started being used in divination, which I found interesting. So it had several centuries to marinate on these archetypical ideas that represent the different triumphi cards. Let me back up because I skipped forward a little too far. So something about the Renaissance is that they were reinventing all of these things about Rome. And so during the Roman era, a triumph is a parade when your Caesar was coming home victorious, right?
Okay.
And they would actually have like full-on celebrations with like floats, like the carts that had these pictorial like displays, literally floats like we would see in a parade today.
So the Arc de Triomphe makes so much more sense to me now.
Because it's the thing that you go in as you return home victorious. So, the Triumphi cards were said to be, they've evolved over time, but they really did start out, they loosely followed the rise and the fall of the Roman Empire, as well as including some Roman pantheons. And they had some sort of storytelling element, you know, mnemonic device that would connect them all together. And so you already have these cards unintentionally recording history along with folklore, because they were both equally important in a culture's identity in that day and age. That is then also, over time, being reinvented and standardized even to what we know them today. So they're not the same, but they're similar. And I really love that today, in its use and interpretation, is able to use it as a lens and a way to help adjust how you're looking at a scenario or a thing happening in your life, and give you a different or unique perspective that is not outlandish or difficult. It can just be like, hey, why don't you look at it from this perspective here instead and see if that will help.
I have to say, I've used devotionals with my Bible in that way. Not as a divination tool, but as a tool to look at my current circumstances and be like, okay, what should I take away from this and how should I move forward?
Yeah, it's interesting how there are a lot of things. And I think that that's ultimately for anyone who grew up in a devout religious setting of some sort, whether you're Christian or Buddhist or Islamic or whatever your faith, if you were brought up in a home that taught you best practices within your faith, you were shown something of that same nature as a way to help inform and advise you throughout life experiences, you know, where you're using the Torah or you're using the
Bodhisattva
Quran stopped working for a second.
I jumped to Buddhism.
Yes. Well, and there are a lot of Taoist writings and Buddhist writings. Like, there's not just Buddha's writings. There's so many different...
Well, there's different Buddhas.
Yes. So these cards started off as just this, like, all the rage. I mean, think about it equivalent to today's terms. It's like your most recent iteration of...
Pokemon.
It could be Pokemon. Think of it like the newest Pokemon that is available. And so it spreads like wildfire, and people are, you know, falling off boats left and right because they're trying to catch their water Pokemons. And oh, wait, there aren't cell phones yet in the 15th century, but still. You know, the card game, however, at this time was vilified for it being a gambling device. So this card game, people would gamble, and it was frowned upon by certain religious groups. It's been stigmatized for a long time.
Has anybody heard of King Louis the 14th? He's a huge gambler. Yes. I mean, Versailles. Right, that was the 14th, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I believe 14th built 14th Versailles.
Was the Sun King.
He also invented ballet.
And high heels. Thank you.
Well, he knew they made the legs look amazing.
Yeah, they made his calves look awesome. Guys, take some cues.
So yeah, 15th century tarot was a all-the-rage card game for several hundred years, in fact, before it was ever used as a divination tool that it is known for today. So the name tarot derives, again, from the Italian name for the card game, and I just realized that I completely forgot to put that in here. I just put in Trionfi, which was the name of the major arcana portion of the deck.
Dang it.
Anyways, you might find it in the notes at the end. So if you check the show notes, some of my resources were pretty simple, straightforward ones. And I'm pretty sure it's in there. Anyways. Really what we're focusing on is how it turned into the storytelling device, which I really think is cool. So, moving on to what tarot is, I guess I didn't really dive in too deep about the divination tool because that's something that it became much more known for in just the last 200 years. So
it sounds like it went side by side with the spiritualist movement, which does not surprise me whatsoever.
Yeah, and I think that it's definitely had some interesting evolution simply because of its symbolism. So when they first started being able to print the cards instead of have to hand paint them all, because back then they were all gilded and hand painted, and there are not many of them still fully intact. I think the oldest one is from the 17th century.
Oh my gosh.
That's a fully intact deck. It's in a museum in France.
Hand painted?
Hand painted. Yeah. I linked to that one definitely in the show notes because it's pretty cool.
Yeah, we'll check that out.
But they ended up taking they standardized the symbols for the major arcana and had it printed because they now have a printing press. So they were printed on these sheets, then they could then cut out and mass produce the cards. So this is like, suddenly there's a lot more accessibility and there's a lot more saturation of a specific stylization that people start like hanging more symbolism on because it doesn't have as much variety. Oh. Right, you know, you have one person's going to paint their depiction a certain way that speaks to them. We see this more and more today because it's easier and easier for people to design their own decks. I mean, I have a friend who has a Final Fantasy 7 themed tarot deck that's all taken from the new, like, the remake that they did of Final Fantasy VII. It's beautiful. And they put a lot of, and they're all screenshots from the video game. So they were able to actually, like, find representations for each of those things that was very specific to the story of Final Fantasy, but still carried the same symbolism that they do today.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I remember reading that there were certain, like, Aleister Crowley is a really well-known magician or wizard, I forget, sorcerer, magician.
Okay.
Which one? I don't know, whatever the technical term is. But Aleister Crowley.
Magicians usually do it as performance.
Yeah.
And I said, I was going to say Scorpio, and that's not it at all.
Scorpios.
Yeah, sorcerers. Do it for a living.
Scorpios do it for a living.
Hey, now.
Yeah, but so I remember reading somewhere because he wrote his whole, like, magic grimoire stuff. And he also, I remember reading somewhere that he may have designed a tarot deck.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were other, like, magician groups that also designed their own tarot decks, which I thought was really interesting.
I'm curious as to why. I don't know, it seems like if you're a musician, you're expected to put out a Christmas album. So if you're a magician by trade, mm-hmm. you're expected to design a deck of cards for...
Right.
Who knows? I don't know. I'm curious. Because I don't see the cards as ever having been really connected. I get it. It gets connected with that mystery and mm-hmm. that performance artist, you know, circus, traveling, caravan, sort of Romany. There's a lot of things about it that it has stigmatized with it.
Right.
Which makes me wonder if it maybe was passed on through the Romany routes from Italy through Germany and France, because they were a nomadic people, mm-hmm. and they did travel quite a lot and trade a lot. So they would be in a prime opportunity to spread a card game, especially if it had gambling involved, given the reputation that they have.
There is a show on Hulu, and darn it, I can't remember what it's called, but it's got the actor from Burn Notice in it. He did this after Burn Notice, mm-hmm. and it's about this fake psychic who serves, like, the local travelers, so they're not the mafia, but it seems really similar. They call themselves gypsies.
Okay.
And he uses tarot cards and they talk. And then it's always enmeshed in that psychic area. And I have also seen it in Alvin and the Chipmunks Meet the Wolfman. Are you always, at any time you think of tarot cards, you think of, like, some woman wearing a scarf on her head and some named Madam something and all of this stuff.
Uh-huh.
And they'll tell you, oh, you will meet a tall, dark, handsome stranger in your future.
Boy.
That's what the imagery that I kind of grew up with gives me.
Rider White Smith or the Rider Tarot Deck. That is the one that I'm thinking of. I linked that one in the show notes. Mm. And that's the one that's going to have the most traditional iconography of the major arcana. Because the ones that you and I are working from today are very different. even the fact that our strength and justice cards are flip-flopped. That's an interesting one. But again, totally understandable that that would happen, considering how much the game slightly evolves from mm-hmm. country to country over time. You know, rules of the game change or you know, stakes, you know, variants of. Mm-hmm. there's lots of different ways to play poker.
This is true. This is true. Texas Hold'em style is fun. I never remember the rules, so I always have beginner's luck.
Right. So, let's see. I'm getting back to what is tarot. So, there are two aspects. Tarot has the playing deck that no longer comes with the 22 triumph cards. It just has the four suits with their 14 cards. And occasionally you can play with the fool, the jester, which is usually included. But decks today will often have two jester cards instead of having a whole line of mm-hmm. trump cards. Which is interesting that they diverged from one another. Mm-hmm. There is still the game available. There's a whole book out there that teaches how to play the tarot game that the cards were originally designed for. So it's a game that still exists today, and there are three different major variants of it in mm-hmm. Italy, Germany, and France. So they have their own types of French playing cards for tarot and mm-hmm. their German playing cards for it. And they look differently. Mm-hmm. But they're obviously traced back to a similar origin. They just have evolved. Okay. So today, tarot is often used as a divination tool. It's very closely associated with the occult. This didn't actually become popular until the late 18th century. So this is after the French revolutions are done, are on the heels of, I guess you could say, mm-hmm. right? Because Napoleon is no longer in power nope. by the end of the 18th century. Nope. He's an imprisoned, and England is really coming into its own as far as becoming a world power and influencer finally, because France and Italy really had them in spades up until France mm-hmm. sort of fell apart. So yeah, it's kind of interesting to see how these major markers in Western civilization's evolution is also taking effect on this card game. Mm-hmm. And the tarot deck, a lot of times, I think, when it's being referred to as an icon of mystery, you only ever see the major arcana cards. You don't see the whole deck. You know, you rarely ever will you see a Six of Cups. Mm-hmm. Like, most people don't know what that means. But when you get a card that's the Lovers or the Tower, people know right. what that means because they're pieces of a story. They're the way that it has been passed on, and the way you can remember how they affect or are influenced by one another is by how they fit together on a timeline as a right. story were to be told. Mm-hmm. So this leads me into the aspect of what makes it so cool towards folklore. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to hand this part over to you.
Oh, to me?
Yeah, yeah. I made the slides, but I'm just basically, I want you to draw the through line to the hero's journey and the idea of the monomyth. I think it's an interesting continuation of this journey.
I think it's a different recognition of the journey.
Yes.
So some of my close friends that know me know that I love Joseph Campbell. He's my hero. I love him. I'm really sad he's gone. And if you have Wondrium or Great Courses Plus, please take the opportunity to watch his PBS documentary series and he goes into detail about all of this. There's also
and PBS is free.
I don't know if it's on the PBS website. I just know I found it on Wondrium. It was at one point on Netflix, but cool. It is no longer.
And it's called?
Oh, shoot. I don't remember what it's called. It's just Joseph Campbell. Okay. It's Joseph Campbell, guys. And there's also a really great series on Netflix called Myths and Monsters that talks about some elements. So if you want to get a shortcut, that's a really good one to watch too. There's only 4 episodes. So Joseph Campbell he traveled all over the world. He's spoken to so many different people. And he recognized a pattern in all of these different stories that he was hearing from all over the world, from cultures that hadn't touched, at least in modern day, like from like India to North America. Like, those countries don't touch. So it's harder for stories like this to make it there. Anyway, so he took these stories and he created something called the Hero's Journey, which if you have ever taken any English class, you will know a little bit about. And they'll not show you all 17 stages that Joseph Campbell outlines, and I'm not going to go through every 17 stage. But I will go through the big ones, and I'm going to actually use The Matrix as my example.
Excellent. That's a good one, considering mm-hmm. we just had the Matrix 4 came out here over the holiday.
So let's go back to the first Matrix. Okay, so it is Mr. Anderson. He isn't Neo yet. He is Mr. Anderson. He's just a normal guy. This is a regular guy going through his day, and then something happens. And my screen's really tiny, so I'm going to go to the next slide. Cut this part at 29:15. I want to see. I don't remember all of them either. I want to see them in detail. Okay, so All right, so using the Matrix, let's go back to the first movie. And we're introduced to Mr. Thomas Anderson, hacker by night, boring office guy by day. They're presenting to you the ordinary world. And then you get to see a call to adventure. And this can show up in several ways. In the Matrix, it was follow the white rabbit. And then it was his introduction to Trinity. That was his call to action. And of course, he's like, this is crazy. He refuses. And then what happens? Well, the agents find him and Morpheus has to try to save him. And that's his mentor or his helper. So we're going to post this picture on our Instagrams, and this, I'm at stage four. So Morpheus is
stage four, mentor, helper.
Morpheus becomes his mentor and helper. And then five, he has to cross the threshold into becoming more than human in some way. So this is when he accepts being Neo. This is when Morpheus trains him. This is going into the construct and teaching him. So this might be when he chose the red pill over the blue pill. And then it's test allies, enemies. Test is the construct. Mm-hmm. And he knows his allies. You are introduced to all of his allies, the crew.
And you're starting to learn that there is an enemy.
Mm-hmm. The agents.
There's more to it than that, though. Like, at that point, they start hinting at the unrest that there is even amongst the humans.
Correct.
You don't get it out and out right away, but you definitely get a strong sense that betrayal is imminent.
Right. Yeah. And let's see. We've got part three. The unification and transformation. There's approach, ordeal, reward, and then there's road.
Block.
I think it's meant to said block, but it says
road. Oh, it's the road back. The hero's return. Yeah, so the approach, ordeal, and reward on that then would be likely their...
Movies 1 through 3.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah, and then you would have the third movie... I think part four is the third movie. Because that's when he makes his messian. Or even the fourth movie would be The Return, 12. And then the third movie would be 10 and 11. So yeah, I remember The Matrix as four blurred films altogether. So it's hard for me to really remember the end of the first movie because I just remember all of them together.
I don't remember how any of them end, other than his realization of his ability to manipulate the Matrix.
He flies in the first movie.
Yeah, that's the thing that's like, woo-woo!
Yeah. You're going to start getting annoyed with the monomyth, because if you learn it well enough...
You'll see it in everything.
Any movie you watch, you will be able to predict the end. You will be able to be like, oh yeah, this is that part. Oh, this is that guy. This is that guy. Oh, got it. Very formulaic. Do you know why?
Because it works.
Well, the reason why is because... So Joseph Campbell wrote A Hero of 1,000 Faces. And this is how he outlined the hero's journey. And then literally based right off of that, George Lucas based Star Wars off of that. And then there was a revamp of the hero's journey ever since then. So you'll find even before that, yes, you'll get glimpses of it. You can apply it, but it's not as strictly formulaic. You can't tell me
The Hobbit wasn't a hero's journey.
Oh, it was for sure a hero's journey. I'm not saying it's not true, but after Star Wars, you'll see like an uptick of more of those adventure with the same hero.
I feel like people understanding how to translate that into a visual medium like film. I think the hero's journey has been a part of literature for a very long time because we have epics.
Gilgamesh is also a really great example. Yeah. Homer's Odyssey as well.
There's quite a few old stories that still follow that formula.
Mm-hmm. You can put Dante's Inferno in that.
Yeah. Faust.
Yep. Yep. All of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can even apply it to sagas, like Norse sagas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can apply it to anything if you really want.
And it's not like these people are getting together and comparing notes and creating their own, like, what do they call that? This MLA or whatever?
Of citation how to tell stories. Formats.
This is not how you build a story. This isn't something people go to college or university back in, like, 800.
We intuitively tell stories in this way.
Yeah, I mean, because you could still apply this even to languages that are not European or are Western centered. You know, there's so many, even the Ramayana, and there are other like Sanskrit stories that follow the same formula. So there is something intrinsically human about stories and how they are formed.
I think humans realized through storytelling how necessary conflict is for growth, because everybody wants to be the hero of their own story, right? Yeah. And the only way that you can become a hero is growth through conflict.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, I think now, I feel like people translate that as trauma. Like if you've experienced trauma, then you've grown and you're, woohoo, realized hero. And but for somebody who hasn't gone through a lot of trauma, what is their hero's journey supposed to be? What's their conflict, right? It can be frustrating.
I was always told that the fool, that, you know, which is the only card that doesn't have a number, zero, is traditionally always seen with a pack on his back and a dog or a companion of some kind along with him on a journey, setting out on a journey. And typically you'll see this in the Rider-Waite tarot deck images. He's walking off the side of a cliff into the unknown. And the idea is that it's the beginning of something and your destination is unknown.
The fool is your call to action.
Exactly.
Well, and the cards themselves can maybe highlight to you where you are on your hero's journey at the moment. Like, are you needing to find some sort of mentor or helper in your life at the moment because you're going through some stuff? Like I feel like they could be useful in that way as well.
So what I want to do, and I think would be kind of fun, is take the wheel of the hero's journey, the 12 to 17 steps, as it were, part of that journey.
Yep.
And then pick a point on that journey and then find out where on the tarot that lands in the storyline. So I'm going to go off of this one from the Cleaver Prototype LLC. The colorful one.
Okay.
All right. In the hero's journey, I'm in the part two, Supreme Ordeal. Is that initiation?
Yes.
And I'm on number six, Test Allies and Enemies. So where might that land me in the lineup of the story of the tarot as well?
Can I name a couple cards?
Yes, just pick one though and tell me why that one and then go to the next.
Okay, I'm going to go with the Tower. So the Tower, I'm going to quickly describe the card. It is a picture of looks like a pine tree that has, the top has been struck by lightning and is on fire and breaking off. And it's also, the tree happens to be white and the background of the picture is black. So it's a black and white picture, but the lightning is yellow and the fire is red. And that's what it looks like.
Why would you pick that one specifically for that part of the journey?
Because the lightning has struck the tree and it's on fire. That looks like conflict. That looks like a test to me.
Okay. You said there were a couple. What were the other ones?
I also was thinking of the Hierophant.
But on this deck, there is actually a bolt of lightning on the Hierophant card as well.
Yeah, that's what signaled to me. It was a test. And let's see. I feel like Temperance just screams test.
Okay, your turn. You pick one on the hero's journey.
Okay, so I'm going to pick Reward in part three.
Reward. There are three cards that come to mind for different reasons. I would probably, I'll start with least likely to most. So I'll start with the Empress, mostly because she just signifies bounty. And I feel like usually that kind of reward or the that kind of receiving of bounty usually comes from something hard fought, you know. if you get a big paycheck, it's because you work buku overtime, right?
Buku. Buku overtime.
Buku overtime.
Buku.
Which would be the ordeal in this event.
Okay. All right.
Reward. So I would say the Empress, and on this one in particular, I would even go so far as to say that this card gives you the similar relief, black background with a moon in the picture and a tree's silhouette in white. But this one in particular, she has tinted the edges of the branches pink. So you get the sense of like cherry blossoms and a time of prosperity.
Spring.
Yeah. So the Empress, the Lovers would be a reward. I feel like oftentimes you don't get to that place of companionship without an ordeal, even if it is just getting the guts to ask someone for their phone number, right? And then the one that I feel is the most reward-like on here is the Star.
Why?
Because I feel like the Star embodies on a much more celestial level that kind of bounty that I talked about in The Empress, where it is, it's not just a physical, it is a spiritual, it is an overall fullness in your self-confidence and who you are and your identity and where you belong on the planet, on in the universe, in the cosmos. And so I feel like the Star brings that level of completion and confidence, I think is the word that I'm looking for. Completion and confidence. That much bigger level.
Okay. And then there are different types. So we were talking about how you can apply each of these to your life. How about we try doing that? You want to do... So there are several different kinds of readings that you can do and spreads that you can use. We're going to use...
I like to do the three card.
Three card. So that's typically a card that you read is past, present, or future, but you can also change it up. And it could be who I was, who I am, who I will be kind of thing. It could be it could be anything that you feel you would need at the moment to give you perspective on something.
I was first introduced to this by asking the cards a question. So seeking knowledge or understanding, and I think that is an important way to approach most things.
And it's also important to ask questions that aren't yes or no.
All right, it's your cards. You get to do the draw. I'll cut them.
Thank you. Oh yeah, you probably shuffled them really well. So my guidebook was telling me to do three stacks. I don't know if that makes a difference.
You can. I don't think it does.
Okay. And then I combine them into one. However I want, I guess. Okay. And then I just take the top cards.
One, two, three.
All right. I've laid out three cards.
Okay.
Is this your reading?
Yeah, me. This is me for right now.
Okay.
Something I'm unaware of. Becoming aware of something I'm unaware of. That's very general. But okay. It's kind of prompting as well. Like, I'm wanting it to give me...
This is what you're focusing on. This is your intention.
Yes.
For this reading.
Yep. And those are important things to have when doing this. I'm having a hard time holding my intention.
Turn All right. Card over. Intention. All right.
First card is past.
I have a reverted star, and then I have a two of wands and a four of wands. The star. Standing outside on a dark night, you gaze up at the stars and sense glimmers of wonder and hope. Even though you can't find concrete answers to life's many questions up there in the sky, you can't help but feel comforted and renewed. Such is the energy of the Star card. It is not about actions or situations. It's simply about connecting to the part of you that is hopeful and serene. This force will bring light back into your life and infuse you with positivity. A lovely card. It is a lovely card. It's very pretty. So that's what the star means.
Mm-hmm. Two of Wands.
It is. Two of Wands is determination, direction, which is very apt for this card. Mm-hmm. So this card is layered. Their background is a rainbow, and the two wands are actually facing each other, but they're obviously going out. They're going somewhere.
There's a forced perspective that makes it look like a road going off into a sunset.
Precisely. Precisely. And the guidebook says, with the Two of Wands, it's clear you're on your way to success. You focused on a goal and have boldly pointed all efforts in that direction. Since the Suit of Wands deals heavily with the mind, take this time to become aware of your thought patterns, specifically toward yourself. What is the quality and tone of your thoughts? Mostly positive or negative? How well do you treat yourself on the journey to your highest dreams?
Okay. Some inspiration on what to try to do in going forward.
I think it's just asking you to make to pay attention to the attitude you approach in your journey. Mm-hmm. And that will definitely affect the outcome.
Well, yeah. And again, that's kind of practical advice.
Right.
Just not always something I slow down enough to go, oh, I should do that.
Mm-hmm.
You hear about being mindful so much that you stop being mindful.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And now the Four of Wands. Completion and celebration.
Ooh.
You've done it. The Four of Wands is a card of completion. Your labors have been steady and strong, and the harvest will be plentiful. In other words, it's time to party. There might be an upcoming event to mark this occasion, a graduation, wedding, or celebration of some kind. So enjoy yourself and those you love. This is an exciting and prosperous time. Ooh, you're gonna have a party.
Well, knowing where we're at with our podcast right now for our first season, I feel like this is a really apt way of looking at where we're at and where we're headed.
I honestly was thinking about the podcast, too. I'm like, is this like the finale of this season? Are we going to have a finale party? I think this means we should have a finale party.
Sure thing. And that is how we divine.
Divining doesn't mean looking into the future. There's also a term that not a lot of people know of. It's called water divining. Mm-hmm. That's where you find water under the ground without using any like special stuff.
A divining rod.
You use a divining rod, which also can be tied to some spiritualism stuff, of course. So that was Sarah's 3-card reading for today. It's my turn now. And she's going to use her cards. Am I doing it again?
Just the three sets.
Oh, I understand. I understand. Okay.
Okay.
I have to bond with the cards in some way.
Yes.
To touch it. Mm-hmm. To ground with it.
Yes. Something like that.
I don't know. If this was a Dresden Files book, that's what it is.
I didn't ask you your question.
Oh, shoot. I didn't think of a question.
You should think about something.
I need to think of an intention. What should I focus on this upcoming week?
Ready. So, our first card on what your intentions for the week should be is the Hierophant.
Okay.
So, the Hierophant is pretty cool. The Hierophant is a treant, and he's actually hanging out talking with these little salamanders.
What? I want to be a treant talking to salamanders.
The Hierophant's roots reach deep, entwined around secrets and traditions and the ages. He believes in ritual and ceremony, in pursuing knowledge and deeper meaning, and in the rigidity of a belief system. He elucidates?
Yeah.
Okay. He elucidates the spiritual and brings it to the earthly plane. He is calm and in possession of himself, and he is the teacher who can help unravel mysteries.
Ooh. I'm not sure how to apply that.
Okay.
To what to focus on yet?
Well, he is calm and in possession of himself, and he is the teacher who can help unravel mysteries.
Maybe I can help somebody this week.
Maybe these are going to be things that will be valuable to your approach to the week.
Okay.
Eight of Wands.
Okay.
That would be, if this is past, present, and future.
Right, this would be present. So I was, like, calm and...
wands. 8. All right. So the 8 of wands, this one's actually kind of cute. It's pretty. The wands are actually represented as dandelion seeds.
Ooh.
And they are being caught up in the wind and being dispersed in this particular image. So wands are typically associated with the element of fire and the spirit. So if ever you have, when elements come into play, that is where the wands land on that spectrum, etc. 8 of wands. She sets her staff before her, step by step to the top of the rise. The glow globes wave lacy fronds on either side of the path. She remembers how a childhood friend called them wishes, and that to take one and blow myriad seeds to the wind would send that wish out. And the further those seedlings traveled, the more power for truth and fulfillment they would gain. She bends down to pluck one with the puff of a breath. She sends the seedlings on their way. It is the ending of the lovely flower that blooms so delicately into elaborate spheres of ethereal beauty, but the beginning of a new growth. The seeds spin away on wild winds, at the mercy of entropy, but sailing with the purpose nature bestowed on them with the gift of gossamer filaments. Sail away and beyond, and then set it down to grow to become a mighty tree. The 8 of wands is the beginning of a long journey towards a goal. A great undertaking is at hand, and it speeds towards reward with hope and momentum.
This reminds me of my finances. I'm looking at my calendar, which is beside Sarah's head, and I've written down all of my bills and my paychecks on there, and I am undertaking this great journey to master my finances.
Okay, then. You ready?
I'm ready.
So the future, the third card here is the 9 of cups.
Do I master my finances?
I find it interesting, since finances are often represented by pentacles, they didn't show up anywhere.
Ooh, well, yeah, okay.
The cups is associated with the element of water and emotions. So much of what comes from the reading within of the cards associated with the cups are associated with feelings, emotions.
Okay.
All that the heart desires is within reach, just at his fingertips, swirling like the rich golden tones of the massive school of fish. They tumble and slice through the waves. Oh, right. I forgot to point out this particular one, the 9 cups are actually fish, and one of the 9 cups is in the hands of a merman who is being surrounded by a school of fish. They tumble and slice through the waves in a frantic arc and spasm of exuberance until the massive body seems to squeeze even water out from the space. There is a sensual delight in the sleek forms brushing past his skin. They sing with the joy of life and the abundance to be found for the taking to those who reach out. The world extends an offering of pleasure intoxicating in its beauty. There is a grace in the swirl of fish as they swim in unison and spin through the water as one organic being, rather than as hundreds of disparate creatures. They swim with such harmony that it feels like a choreographed dance. Fish are symbolic of health, prosperity, and good fortune. The 9 of cups entices with the pleasure of the senses, satisfaction, and wish fulfillment. The future is assured, and there is bounty on the horizon.
Woo! It sounds like I master my finances, guys. Wait, what was this one again?
The Hierophant. You have these, they are all relayed back.
What did the Hierophant mean again?
The Hierophant is tradition, ceremony.
Ah, my mother's been sharing with me her ways of how she survived her college life and young family life.
That, yeah.
Thanks, Mom.
The Hierophant's roots reach deep, entwined around secrets and traditions and the ages. Calm and in possession of himself, and is the teacher who can help unravel mysteries. So, you're spending your time with the teacher who is helping unravel the mysteries of your finances. As you're putting into actions Oh, see, you could find any way to honestly, I think this is one of the coolest ways to come with unique storylines for writing stories.
Right?
Because it can help randomize. It'll give you ways of just take it a direction you wouldn't have done on your own. Or,
like, break your writer's block. Yes. It's a good way to break your writer's block.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. If you don't know where your character's going to go, you can't figure out what they're supposed to do. Well, get to know your character first, mm-hmm. and then you can either run them through some writing simulations and some experiments, or you can just draw a tarot for them. We're at a lot of time, folks. It's probably time we should go. Thanks for joining us on our tarot readings.
Send us a message on Instagram at
toklore.podcast.
If you have a story or resource that you'd like to share, shoot us an email at
toklorepod@gmail.com.
If you want to help support us, please follow, like, and leave a review on
Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Anchor FM, and more.
Thanks for listening.
In a world where dead come back to life. And spirits haunt the living. There is one creature that strikes fear in the heart of man more than any other. Sucking the air from its victims. Haunting their breath. But there is hope, a place to turn to. Taoist monks are the only ones who can defeat the young Shi.
Join Sarah and Kiki as they discover the ancient legend of the Chinese hopping vampire. Next time on Toklore.